So Dr. Stephanie Smith received her PhD in public administration at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. She's currently an assistant professor at the University of New Mexico, so she left Syracuse in the snow and all that good stuff for New Mexico. Smart move. I live in Rochester, so I actually know what it's like to live in Syracuse. She's currently an assistant professor at the University of New Mexico, where she studies the politics of health policy and administration in developing countries. Her work in global newborn health policy and in India, Nepal, and Bolivia has resulted in publications in both The Lancet and Social Science in Medicine. Join me in welcoming Dr. Smith.
Thank you.
Oh, and that was my coffee.
That's your coffee.
That's okay. That's okay.
There's also
a sign. Right. The important things. The important things. Keep the coffee.
And shouldn't line
for that a long time. You'll indulge me. I moved from San Francisco to Syracuse, so I couldn't quite put away the Giants fan in me completely this morning. In about half an hour, you won't be able to distinguish me from any other Giants fan in town. Thank you for being here today. It's a good time for Giants fans. It's a good time for maternal health advocacy globally. And so I'm here to talk with you this morning about maternal health's ascent on the global health policy agenda. And I titled this How the MDGs and the Continuum of Care Framework Changed an Initiative's Fortunes when we submitted these proposals months and months and months ago. And I am going to talk about that, but I'll talk about a couple of other things too in all this. And I also wanted to acknowledge my co-author, Mariela Rodriguez, who's a graduate student at American University, who helped with a lot of the data collection and putting together the information to support this study. So really what we're talking about this morning, and I think this is a nice follow-on to our previous presentation in the maternal and child health international arena. But we're talking about, for 500,000 women dying from pregnancy-related complications each year around the world. We've knew this for some 20-30 years, despite knowing that, there was very little movement to address the problem until very recently. And so that's what I want to look at today, is particularly how do we explain that shift in momentum for this cause? I don't have any conflicts of interest. Okay. I've put the broader research question here in terms of this study is part of a larger set of six studies that are examining what shapes the policy process outcomes, particularly agenda status, policy adoption, and implementation scale-up across six global health policy issue areas under the rubric of the Global Health Policy and Advocacy Project. Jeremy Schiffman in the back is the lead on coordinating that set of six studies. We've worked together in the past, those studies encompass alcohol and tobacco, tuberculosis, pneumonia, maternal and newborn health initiatives, and I focus on maternal health. So this is our guiding overall question for the set of six studies. How did the Global Health Network issue characteristics and environment, I can go into those a little bit more in a minute, shape policy process outcomes and public health impact? And for this study, we see a network of people emerging to study and advocate for maternal survival, maternal mortality reduction globally is where we're focusing in the mid-1980s. So that's why that's there. But really what is more specific to this case is after 20 years of relative inattention, why this sudden takeoff around 2007. I should also probably mention studies funded by the Gates Foundation. So a little bit more on our analytical framework, and I'm actually, in the interest of time, just going to kind of gloss over some of this. But what we're doing is taking three kind of sets of factors under three conceptual headings: a network of individuals and organizations who are linked by a shared concern for an issue and problem alleviation, some of the issue characteristics, both inherent being those more measurable, objective, if you will, characteristics of the issue, ascribed being those that how we portray the issue to try to convince folks to act and to act in certain ways on the problem. And then the policy environment, things outside the network that shape how the issue progresses on the policy agenda, and how those three sets of things affect policy process outcomes, so the agenda status, policy adoption, implementation scale-up, and public health impacts. And I'll be focusing mostly on agenda status today. Because there's just too much to talk about when you look over 30 years of a global health initiative to talk about in a brief presentation. So methodologically, this is a case study, historical analysis over 25 to 30 years. This will come together with five other studies, and we'll be looking at cross-case learning about global health initiatives and their success in securing agenda status and policy adoption implementation at the national and local levels. I had 24 interviews mostly with people who are closely involved in this network of that advocates for maternal mortality reduction globally. Extensive document analysis and previous research, a lot of reports and statistical information that's available from major players in this arena. And here, I'm going to sort of focus on maternal mortality reduction as the issue. I might say maternal health sometimes, and maternal health often used to encompass maternal mortality reduction, or is even primarily focusing on that issue, although I recognize that maternal health is something much broader than just surviving pregnancy and childbirth. But here we are focusing on this particular one. I'm going to come back to what Millennium Development Goals are in just a moment. So maternal mortality globally, for some 25, 30 years, we thought that we had about 500,000 women dying related to pregnancy and childbirth every year. And it's just been more recently, the most recent figures showing it's closer to, there's been a reduction from 1990 when the first relatively solid estimates came out. Previous presenter was pointing out there are very large confidence intervals when we look at these things. So, but we'll go with around 300,000 more recently. It's largely a developing world problem. 99% of maternal deaths occur in low and middle income countries. Some of the primary causes, and we have here a list of both more direct technical causes in terms of postpartum hemorrhage, hypertensive disorders, et cetera. But this is very much a problem that's shaped by the social circumstances of women and their status in society and thereby limited access to health services, quality health services. A sense of where we are in things. So the Millennium Development Goals, we'll talk more about those in a minute, there's a goal set internationally to reduce maternal mortality by three-quarters by between 1990 and 2015. And we only have about a fifth of the countries that had very, very high levels of maternal mortality in 1990 on track to meet that goal by 2015 currently. So there's measured, limited progress on this to this point. And as of 2009, there was an estimated $88 billion shortfall in what was needed to adequately address maternal, newborn, and child health needs between 2009 and 2015. So it gives you a sense of where things stand in that respect. So I want to walk through a little bit of history and relate some of this to analytical categories in the study. So I titled this Network Emergence, but that's probably not quite right, one of those pressures of pulling together slides a week ago. Right? But this first point up here, we saw, this is an environmental factor, and we saw some international recognition of maternal mortality being a problem globally in the Alma-Ata Declaration on Primary Healthcare as a goal and priority for the UN decade for women. And what that did was, what those did were kind of background factors that prompted the World Health Organization and UNFPA to start pulling together research on into a database on maternal mortality and maternal health more broadly. And that helped to lead to this first international consultation led by the WHO in 1985, and was really the first time that we had good estimate of the scope of the problem in terms of 500,000 women dying related to pregnancy and childbirth at that time. That figure had been thrown around before, but it's the first time we were able to really say there was some evidence, some sufficient evidence behind that figure, and that was powerful. Around the same time, a few months earlier, Alan Rosenfield and Deborah Main published this important article in The Lancet titled "Where's the M? Where are the Mothers in Maternal and Child Health?" And so saying, you know, all of this attention and resources going to child's health and survival, and mothers were really neglected, and we need to do something about this. So around the time these things are happening, 1985, 1986, Family Care International, the bottom right organization, is formed by a couple of women who are very strong women's health and particularly maternal health advocates, and they help to get together some of these big organizations in the Interagency Group for Safe Motherhood, which gets formally established. At the same time, there's the first international conference on safe motherhood in Nairobi, Kenya, in 1987, and this really marks the beginning of a more formal formal coordinated efforts and actions on behalf of global maternal mortality reduction. So network develops over some period of time as you know, beginning in the mid-1980s, and as it grows, we see it expand to include a lot of researchers, health professionals, technically oriented program officers, women's health advocates located at UN agencies and non-governmental organizations, universities and research institutions, professional associations, health institutions, bilateral and multilateral donor institutions, and private foundations. So this group expands quite a bit. In their first 20 years, which Jeremy and I look at in a study that was published in The Lancet in 2007, you know, they're really very focused on research establishing the problem, identifying solutions, raising awareness internationally, and establishing on programmatic agendas. But they have some challenges. It's a very limited, at least in terms of the formal guiding body, it's very limited membership. And there are some problems with cohesiveness. They have some disagreements surrounding intervention strategy. So some folks think, well, we need to focus on getting people emergency obstetric care, facility-based births. Others, we need to focus at the community level because there's no way, since this is a problem primarily for rural poor women, that we're going to, in any timely fashion, get them access to emergency obstetric care and health facilities. So there's a divide, and there are people who feel very strongly on either side of this this divide. And this does cause a problem, problem tensions within the network, but also a problem for advocating with policymakers because they see a divided front within the network and don't understand why there isn't a more consensus, more unified message about what we should be doing to alleviate maternal mortality. So this is a big challenge in the 1990s and into the early 2000s. Now, in this latter period, 2005 to 2011, we start to see some change in this. We start to see more people reaching out from the network to build bridges, find common cause with other issues, including newborn and child health. This isn't everybody, but this is some members of the network are concerned with this. And we also see them, recognizing some opportunities for advocacy with the Millennium Development Goals and some of the commitments that particularly donors have made to this continuum of care framework that links maternal, newborn, and child health. And they see some opportunities and decide, well, let's, to a large extent, at least publicly, put our differences aside and make sure, and put out a consensus statement so that they're not in the way of progress, of making progress in advocacy for the issue. Let's see if I can put this into context a little bit with my next slide. So in the policy environment, something really important has happened in the policy environment that is at first not recognized by this maternal health network. We have established the United Nations Millennium Development Goals over the course of 2000-2001. So what this does is establishes a shared framework for global poverty reduction with strong support from heads of state. It's a consensus process. It brings international UN agencies, donors, and nations together to back a common agenda. And maternal mortality reduction gets on this set of 8 poverty reduction goals as Millennium Development Goal 5. It later gets a 5A when they add a universal access to reproductive health care in 2007. So this, I think one of the interesting points here is the Maternal Health Network has nothing to do with establishing MDG 5 and doesn't really recognize the potential of leveraging MDG 5 for maternal health advocacy until around 2005. But I don't think this is not universally the case for all of the networks of folks that are concerned with the different Millennium Development Goals, but it's not uncommon. They were at first maybe seen as just another international agreement that would be honored to some extent, but wasn't anticipated to be as influential as it was. Part of what happens here is that at the same time in 2005, as the Millennium Development Goals get a 5-year kind of check on their progress, several donors force the maternal, newborn, and child health networks to come together in a single secretariat that's housed at the World Health Organization. And the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn, and Child Health forms. They're all committed to this continuum of care framework. This, and they link up with Millennium Development Goals 4 and 5. We heard about Millennium Development Goal 4 for child survival, and it links the child survival and maternal survival MDGs along with this continuum of care framework. And so, again, you have this, you begin to have this set of donors and others who pushed for this are now committed to addressing maternal alongside newborn and child health. You have the UK, Norway, and the Gates Foundation, others behind this, the whole UN system. And now leaders and donors and international agencies have a united agenda, and they have to take action on this. So this influences what happens. And as the network that's of actors is concerned with maternal survival specifically comes to recognize this, they begin to change their strategy to take advantage of this opportunity. And they do contribute to what this culminates in 2010, the UN Secretary General's Global Strategy on Women's and Children's Health. Several of the network actors do contribute to helping to get together, leverage this $40 billion in commitments from a large a group of stakeholders for 2011 to 2015. About half of this $40 billion is new commitments. About half of it was already in plans and ready their plans to go. So there are some questions about the real magnitude of this $40 billion, though it does go some way toward meeting this $88 billion shortfall that I mentioned earlier that we saw for 2009 to 2015. The most recent report and accountability that that about $10 billion had been dispersed into early 2012. So there's some progress, but there's still a lot that needs to be done in terms of accountability. quality processes. So this was largely led by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Came about idea in a conversation between him and Bill Gates. But we did see some other world leaders doing some things a little bit earlier to also help to bring this process along. Jens Stoltenberg and Gordon Brown, prime ministers of Norway and UK, were very active and influential in the lead up to some of this. A couple of conclusions, or I guess I want to say in conclusion, would you find that the policy environment, the network, and issue characteristics interacted to shape this agenda status of maternal health with the global strategy gained the highest agenda status that it's had since it came to international attention some 30 years ago. And all of these factors have been influential in determining that trajectory of a relatively plateaued or slight uptick for about 20 years, and then a more recent upswing. Though I think that, and I didn't put here the with the conclusion of the Millennium Development Goals agenda in 2015, there's a real need for the network to kind of coordinate and get its act together in that with respect to that deadline that's coming up. But we did see a couple of things, as the network expanded and became more inclusive, they added voices and resources for the issue. I didn't talk about this earlier, but that network is largely made up of folks from the global north, and so that is a problem for implementation, national level adoption and implementation. But they were strong in building, building the evidence base, and would be ready when. But getting some internal and external support for that to be ready for when policy windows open is important. So, thank you. I spoke longer than I had intended, but thanks for your time and attention.
Any questions for Stephanie?
Good.
Yes. I just wondered where you don't mention the World Bank, and it was one of the funders of the 1987 World Conference.
Right. Right, right. Well, I mean, I guess they're listed under the conference sponsors, and I think members of the interagency group. But right, I didn't go into detail about their role and such. Yeah, there's something more specific you'd like me to follow up on?
Oh, no, I just wondered. I didn't see them included.
Okay, sorry. Or maybe I overlooked. They should have been in there.
Another question. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just have a question about sort of the framing of the issue. Mm-hmm. And, you mentioned it briefly in the beginning that you might entertain the term of intentionality. Mm-hmm. But I think like at some point there was a decision made to frame this issue as prevention of infernal mortality versus promotion of infernal health.
Right.
And I wonder sort of what impact that has. I think, the negative versus the positive of children, also the more narrow. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, in terms of issues of maternal morbidity, mm-hmm. What that means for things like fistula that kind of don't necessarily now fall into the category of mortality.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
do
I think.
Do you want to repeat the question?
Sorry. Right. So in terms of the framing of the issue is, in a very limited way to maternal mortality and what that means for maternal morbidities, for example. Right. I mean, morbidities are, incredibly neglected. I mean, there are some 20 times the number of maternal morbidities there are maternal deaths, and we're talking about severe maternal morbidities that affect people's ability to work and function in society, and so the scope of that problem is quite large. I think there is some, it's something that when I in my interviews came out as recognition that this is neglected and that it is being neglected in the on the broader policy agenda. I I I'm not exactly sure how that came about. It wasn't seen as compelling a case to make. There are other issues that have been controversial that have been left out with the more broader reproductive health agenda. Abortion is a controversial issue. So there are, family planning is controversial, and I think there is maybe a recognition and a move to try to bring some of those issues more into the agenda, and you probably have a sense of that from your experience at the Maternal Health Task Force too, but it's not there very strongly yet. It's my sense.
Yeah. Anybody in the audience care to kind of respond to that question or have a
Right.
And so, I just wonder what there's a need for funding streams. Is it a new movement now?
Is it a new what?
A new movement.
New movement. I don't. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that the complexity of the problem and, that it is, it does get at, gender inequality and the, very structures of societies and sociocultural factors being things that are, that we see as being difficult to change. And so, I think probably there are strategic decisions made about where to focus, and it's much harder to see, how do we address those things and then see impact for this area. It's easier to look at interventions and how we make specific interventions available and accessible. So I think that's a real challenge. I think it's going to continue to be a real challenge in terms of advocacy. I think the move toward trying to support health system development is something that gets at that to an extent or in a certain way. I'm not sure, I don't have a good sense of what the continuing momentum for that movement is. So.
Questions for any of our other presenters? Thank you all again for a hand for all of you.